weekend, so we can excuse it off on that. How are you this morning, Keith? Keith's giving me a thumbs up. You? Yeah, giving a thumbs up there. So, did everyone have a good holiday? Good Thanksgiving? Eat too much? Good food? Good company? Good fellowship? Very good. Do we have visitors with us this morning? We do, huh? Mercy's back. Good to have you, Mercy. Yes, ma'am. Mercy's been here. Is this the third week, I think? She lives in this area, in this neighborhood. So we're very glad to have her with us today. Very much so. Andrew, who you got sitting back here with you today? Your grandparents. You want to introduce them to everybody, or does everybody know them? Okay. Good to have you all. Did you have a good Thanksgiving? Very good. Glad to have you this morning. All right. Well, you going to elaborate on that? Audrey said that's Jonathan's daddy, but he's different from Jonathan. So I was going to say, are you going to elaborate on what that means, what those differences are? Fella grabbed that and go any direction he wanted to go, I guess. So, all right. Well, let's ask Jonathan's daddy to lead us in prayer this morning. Visiting preachers always got to do something. So if you would, won't you open us with prayer? Amen. Thank you very much. Okay, do we have any announcements that we need to make in here? Is Layton still in the rehab hospital over on Fry? Okay. Not doing well. Okay. And Brother Connor about the same, I guess. Okay. All right. We've been looking for a little while. Gospel according to Mark, and we are in the fourth chapter today, ready to start with verse 35 and do our best to complete chapter 4 this morning. Little bit of review. We're right in the thick of the early stages, but getting very, very involved in the ministry of Jesus at this point. Mark is giving us his account. If you'll remember when chapter 4 started a couple of weeks ago, Jesus was down by the Sea of Galilee, down by the lake, and the crowds had followed him. He has been in a couple of homes up to this point. He has performed miracles. He has healed people. He has driven out the evil spirits, the demons, and so the crowds are following him everywhere that he goes. But when chapter 4 started, verse 1 says that they came down by the lake, and the crowd was so large that Jesus couldn't talk to them. He couldn't see all of them, and they were crowding him, that if this blue line here is the water's edge, they had pushed him, and this is a dry line, they had pushed him back against the water's edge, and he's about to get wet himself, and he can't see everybody, so he created sort of an artificial pulpit setting is what he did. Says he got into a boat, and they cast out a little bit away from the land, from the land. So the people, they're standing right at the edge of the water. Unless they want to get wet, they've got to stop. And he can get out here to where he can see them, similar to putting a pulpit up here, to where you can get there and you can address the crowd. It's a huge crowd. Huge crowd. And we talked about that. You know, he didn't have any of the benefits of a cordless microphone that he was pinned on here to where people could hear him. He had to project, and he had to do it in the outdoors there. Well, we're still in that setting as we begin this morning, but he is going to move. Verse 35 says, if I can get my clicker to work here. What are we doing wrong, Victor? I'm on, but there we go. It says that day when evening came. So the day's over. He's probably tired. The crowd's probably tired. But he says to his disciples, he said, let's go over to the other side. Let's get away from the crowd. Let's go to the other side of the Sea of Galilee. We've talked about this several times already as we go through Mark. The Sea of Galilee, it really is a lake to us, those of us from Texas. If you ever go over there, it's not a huge body of water. You can easily see across it. Now, you're not going to skip a rock across it. It's pretty good ways across, but you can see the land over on the other side. And so it's not an enormous body of water, but it's a lot happens at Sea of Galilee. A lot of things around the ministry and within the ministry of Jesus occur at the Sea of Galilee. A lot of the disciples, some of the disciples, they were fishermen, professional fishermen, commercial fishermen, and they fished on the Sea of Galilee. But Jesus says, let's go over to the other side. Let's get to the other side of the water, and we'll go over there and talk to people and interface with people over there. So he leaves the crowd behind, verse 36. And they took him along just as he was in the boat. Now you say, why would you say just as he was? Well, I'm not sure all of the significance with that. But I think what Mark may be saying, because we're going to see some miraculous things take place, he didn't take anything with him that could be construed as something magic or something powerful that he's going to use for the activities that are going to take place. They took him just as he was. He was just walking along over on this side of the water. He's been talking to people. He's preached to the people. He's told some parables, and we've looked at these parables. He talked about the parable of the soils or the sower, whichever you want to look at. And the man, the farmer, is broadcasting his seed. It falls on different types of soil, and he talked about that. He's talked about the mustard seed last week we looked at. Though it's very, very small, it can have tremendous life that comes from it. He's talked about light. So you wouldn't tell who would light a lamp and then put it under the bed or put it under a basket or put it under a bushel or something to where you couldn't get the light for the house. The purpose for lighting the lamp was to be able to light up the house. And so he's had all these stories, parables, lessons that he's teaching them. And Mark says he's ready to go to the other side just like he was. He doesn't take anything special with him. He's traveling light. He doesn't have a lot of suitcases. He doesn't have a lot of boxes that he's taking. I think he's also saying that from the standpoint of he goes just as he was, he's tired. He's tired. It's exhausting. Working with people all the time is exhausting. I'm going to tell you, people who say that the Lord's Day is a day of rest have never preached. Am I right on that? He's never preached. If you think speaking three times on a Sunday and interfacing with people and listening and talking, and it's exhausting. It really is. It's exhausting to work with people. If you're in a business, if that's what you do professionally, and you deal with the public, and you do that hour after hour after hour after hour, does it drain you? Sure it does. People have a way of draining you. People have a way of sucking the life out of you if you don't get a break from it from time to time. And that's why Jesus took breaks. And that's why I'm convinced he encouraged us to take breaks. We'll see Jesus, he tells his apostles, his disciples, on one occasion, the old translation, the old King James says, let us go apart. Let us come apart, which means apart from the crowds. And I heard one preacher one time say, if you don't go ye apart, you're going to come apart. You're going to blow up. You'll finally be to a point of exhaustion. You'll have a physical issue. So maybe he's saying he went just as he was. He was tired. He was exhausted, because we're going to see he certainly goes to sleep. He certainly does seem to be weary and ready for some rest. But anyway, so they take him along just as he was in the boat. In the boat. I'm assuming this is the same boat that he preached out of. We don't know that for sure, but that's an assumption that I would make. But Mark says there were also other boats with him. Other boats with him. Now, why is that important? Well, I think Mark's given us the flavor again that the crowd's not going to let him get away. Whenever you can heal people and you can drive spirits out of them, you can heal leprosy, you can raise the dead. We're going to see him later feed thousands of people with just a couple of loaves of bread, a few fish. Whenever you can do that, you'll have a crowd follow you. You'll have the crowd follow you until the authorities get mad at him and it becomes dangerous to follow him. Then the crowds seem to dissipate. But you don't have a crowd follow you at this point. And so I think Mark is letting us know there that they're still trying to stay up with him. There's other boats. He gets in the boat to go to the other side, but anybody else that had a boat around there, they follow him. It's kind of like the paparazzi. Is that the right pronunciation? No, they follow the stars. They chase them. They try to keep up with them so they can get the photographs. They can get all that. Well, these other boats go with him. I think it's also important that there's going to be several witnesses to what takes place here. It's not just going to be Jesus and his disciples that are going to talk about these events, but it'll be the other people in the other boats also. Verse 37 says, a furious squall came up. Anybody know what a squall is? Not squall. Not talking about the old Indian days of the female, the squall. This is a squall. Strong winds, strong storm, comes up quickly. Now, they can be very powerful. The Greek word here for this, you really go back and look at it, is the same word that we pull out our English word from earthquake from. But this is a wind storm that's taking place that blows in quickly. I remember, other than reading it in Scripture, my first remembrance of having any experience with a squall was one time Karen and I were down in the Caribbean, and I was speaking on the Caribbean lectureship that they had down there. And the church that I was preaching for in Dallas at the time, we supported a missionary in the Bahamas, in this region. And we had sent money and supplies and helpers to put up a church building there. But I'd never seen the church building. And the elders had said, if you get a chance, go over there and check on that building. And I thought, well, I don't know how I'm going to do that. I'm not going to have a boat to get over there. But we got down there, and a missionary was there. Well, he had been in missions work, but at that time he was preaching in Lubbock. And he had his own plane, private plane, and he had flown from Lubbock to, where were we? Freeport. And he had, which was a long trip in a little plane. But he had flown it over there, and he knew this missionary over there. And so the way this all worked out, he said, he had talked to the missionary and said, why don't you see if Danny would come over here and preach Sunday morning? We were there at this lectureship. So I said, that'd be fine. How are we going to get there? He said, going to go in my plane. I said, okay. You got here from Lubbock. I guess I'll go with you in that. So me and four preachers, which is a tough crowd to have anyway, but four preachers got in his plane with him flying, and we headed over to go over to Abaco, was the island we were going to. You know where Abaco is? But anyway, we had been flying for about 30 minutes, and I heard the guy that was flying the plane had enough knowledge to know. No, it was the missionary from that area. He said, there's a squall coming in. And I said, what's a squall? He says, it's a storm that said they just come quickly. They just out here on in the around the ocean, around the seas, they just form quickly and they're right on you. It's like a little mini tornado is the way he described it. And I said, and we fixing to be in? He said, yeah. He said, everybody needs to hold on. It's going to get pretty rough here. Well, it did. And boy, the rains came and it was hitting that plane and it was tossing us around. And I didn't know how long we were going to be in it, but we were in it a lot longer than what I wanted to be. But we finally came out of it and set it down there in Abaco, and I went down to the little church to preach. The three guys razzed me about it because they said, we'll never forget your opening line. I told them, I said, I want y'all to know that I'm glad to be here this morning. I said, in fact, I'd be glad to be anywhere this morning. I'm just glad to be, because of the storm we were in, we weren't sure we were going to get here. Well, that was a squall. And they come up quickly, and they're not just a little bit of wind. There's a lot of wind to them. Well, Mark says, verse 37, this is a furious one. This is a strong one. And it comes up and the waves broke over the boat so that it was nearly swamped. It was about to sink, had so much water in it. And so everybody's concerned and everybody's trying to, I would guess, we don't see this, but I would guess had any buckets or anything they might have had, containers, they're trying to get water off of the boat. They're trying not to blow off of the boat. And they're frightened. It's a very frightening situation. And all this time, Jesus is in the stern sleeping on a cushion. Now, Matthew records this story. So does Luke. Both of them in the eighth chapter. Eighth chapter of Matthew, the eighth chapter of Luke. And we have three accounts of the story, and each one of them give us a little bit different, not so much different, but gives a different insight into it. But in all three stories, Jesus is asleep. Now they wake him up. And in the Matthew account and the Luke account, particularly the Matthew account, you get the impression that it irritates Jesus, they woke him up. I don't know how you are if somebody just wakes you up in the middle of a good sleep, But I don't know if you just come out of it smiling and cheerful or not, or whether you, why, leave me alone. Why would you wake me up? Do you not know how tired I am? This is why I wanted to get away from the crowds. This is why I wanted to rest. Why would you wake me up? And in Matthew's account and Luke's account, he challenges their faith, both of them. Mark doesn't indicate he asked that question, but Matthew and Luke both say he'll ask them about their faith. Ye of little faith. Why are you, if you're this frightened, why are you this frightened? Do you not know who I am? Do you not know the powers that I have? Now, Mark doesn't go that far into it, but it does say the disciples woke him up and they asked him this question. They said, Teacher, do you not care if we drown? Which is probably, if he was in fact irritated, that had a bearing on it. That would have been one of the reasons also. What do you mean, do I care? Have I been taking care of you? Have I been teaching you spiritual truths that will have an eternal benefit, an eternal destiny for you? Have I not been healing people? Have I not, did I not choose you among all those out there? And I came along and said, drop your nets and come and follow me, and I'll make you fishers of men. Do you not feel like you're spirit? What do you mean, do I care? Do you not care if we drown? So I think it might be a double-coded thing. One, that he got awakened when he wasn't ready to be woke up yet. The other is the question that they ask him, do you not care? Well, again, in Matthew account and Luke account, he talks to them about their faith and their lack of faith. But Mark says, verse 39, he got up, he rebuked the wind, and he said to the waves, quiet, be still. Now, a rebuke would be more of a, you're barking out an order. It's you disciplined. He disciplined the wind. Then he talked to the water. Be still. Be still. And then Mark says, then the wind died down and it was completely calm. Now, there's just a few verses here, and this is a very familiar story to look at, but I want us to really picture being in that boat there at that moment. I think we run through this a little bit too quickly sometimes. Two things. One of them, rebuking the wind. That's pretty impressive that somebody has got the power to just say, wind, stop. Quit blowing. You go back and you read several times in the Psalms. The psalmist, in talking about the wind, will say, God controls the wind. God is the master of the wind. Do you Google search on it with a concordance sometimes and look at wind and who has the power over the wind. Psalmist says that back in the Old Testament, God does. God does. So let's go back to what's already happened in the stories in the first chapters of Mark here. Do you remember when Jesus healed the man on the Sabbath? They got all unhappy with him here in the earlier chapters. But the thing he told him, are your sins are forgiven. Get up and walk. And that created a lot of conversation. Jesus, when pounced on, when fussed at, when ridiculed, he asked the question, what's the easiest, to say you're healed or say your sins are forgiven? Which one's the easiest? But the real point was, only God forgives sins. And that was also the point that we ought to get out of that passage. that Mark is trying to help us see. Jesus is God in the flesh. And he has the power to forgive sins. We talked about that. Let's bring that over now to this rebuking of the wind. If the psalmist tells us God has power over the wind, God commands the wind, and Jesus now rebukes it and says, wind, stop blowing, quit, and it stops. What's the conclusion? What's the deduction to get out of that? Jesus is God. He's got that control. That's God's job, to command the winds. Now, as impressive as that is, and it is impressive, the thing I think we miss with this passage many times, because most of the sermons I hear and most of the commentaries and scholars that you read, they talk about the wind, stopping the wind. And that is absolutely what was the first thing in motion here that makes the squall go away and takes away the danger. But he says that the wind died down and it was completely calm. That one gets my attention as much as the wind. You say, what do you mean by that? You ever been out in a Texas lake fishing and you get you a good spot, a good fishing hole, and you tie your boat off to some trees or brush there if they've got it, or if not, you throw that homemade anchor you got over and you try to get your boat set to where you can stay here where the fish are and you don't want to drift. You want to stay put and fish this spot out, and you get set and all of a sudden a ski boat goes by out here. And he goes by in a hurry. What happens? The waves, the wake, and the waves, and it rocks your boat, and it rocks your boat. How long does it rock your boat after the ski boat's gone? Seems like sometimes 20 minutes. Not ever going to quit rocking. And by the time it almost quits rocking, then here comes another one. Comes by. My point is, even when the wind stopped, water doesn't just get calm that quickly. Another example I might use. It's been a long time since I've been to one, but when my son was small, we'd want to go to a water park. Did you ever go to water parks? And you get to a water park and they always had the wave pool. That's the one that everybody get in that's going to happen every 20 minutes or whatever. And the big waves come and it's going. And then all of a sudden they shut it off. How long does it take for that water to get still? Long time. Why? You don't just stop the motion of water. Just because the wind has stopped does not mean the water is calm. To me, that's as impressive, and that's as miraculous as the stopping of the wind. That the water, he rebuked the wind, and then he just looked at the water and said, be still. Peace, be still. Sounds like it'd make a good song, doesn't it? Be still. And Mark says, it was. To where everybody is terrified. They were already terrified, already scared, but now they've got a reverential awe here. And said, who is this? Who in the world can this be that even the waves obey? Now you're saying, well, the disciples ought to have known that. They've been through enough. They ought to already known who he was. They were there when he told the man, get up and walk. They were there when he said, your sins are forgiven. They've been there all the way through. That's why it's important for Mark to have told us there were other boats that went along. The other boats got caught in the same squall. The other boats were fearful for their lives too. And they were afraid they were going to capsize also. and the other boats experienced the winds stopping and the waters getting still, simply because the man that had been at the water's edge, that they wanted to hear so badly that they forced him out into the boat to talk to him, simply because this same man stood up over in his boat and said, "Be still, water, be still." And so they are all terrified. Terrified. And they ask each other. And somebody will say, "Well, is that terrified because of the squall?" Probably. Probably that's still hanging in there. But it's also because of what Jesus did. You say, "Well, you oughtn't to be scared of. You oughtn't be scared of Jesus." Is that right? What did Solomon say as he was laying down the pen for the last time as an old man? He writes the book of Ecclesiastes, and he gets to the end of it, and he says, "Let's hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Let me bottom line this whole thing." I've looked throughout the book of Ecclesiastes. He says, basically, he's looked at life. He's looked at everything life had to offer. And at one point, he says, "I tried it all. I didn't withhold anything." He had the power, the money. He could make it happen. But when it's all over with, and he is bottom lining it, he said, "Here's the conclusion of the whole matter." What did he say it was? "Fear God. Keep his commandments. For this is the whole..." Some of the translations insert the word duty, but he's saying this is the whole of man. It's what we were created for. Fear. Fear. That's not the kind of fear that you're afraid of a ghost coming up and scaring you, or somebody slipping up behind you and nudging you. This is a reverential fear. This is an awesome fear of God. Well, Mark says they're terrified. And they ask each other, and I think this does include those other boats, "Who in the world is this?" Well, if they have any knowledge at all of the Psalms and the Old Testament passages, they're going to know that it was God, that God controls the waves or the winds, and that's going to control the waves. Okay, I left you some extra time this morning. We had fewer verses. Jim, did I skip 40? He said to his disciples, "Why are you so afraid? Do you still have no faith?" And that's, I guess, I did skip 40, and I skipped it in my mind reading it this morning, because that's the same thing he asked in Matthew and in Luke. Was there anything else on that you wanted to point out other than I was wrong? Other than I'd made a mistake? And that's all right. Point that out when I do. Please do. Other comments? Yes, sir.
That's an incredible moment. All we get that is that they disturbed him and woke him up. I just think it's incredible that you're out of the sea and you're in the rock. And all this is happening.
And that's why they were all talking about it. Yeah. Appreciate that. Yeah, it is very, very incredible. There is another story in the Bible that's kind of similar in one way to this, though I don't necessarily see a connect here at this moment. But what would be that story? Huh? Jonah. Jonah. Because if you remember, the storm comes up and it says the mariners, the men on the boat, they were trying hard to save the boat. And Jonah was down in there asleep. And they came and woke him up and said, "Do you not care? Get up and do something." In fact, in Jonah it says they were crying out to their gods and they said, "You need to cry out to your God," which tells us something. They didn't worship the God of heaven. They were pagans, pagan worshipers. There's a whole lot of things in that story I don't have time to go into, but it's kind of interesting if you look at it. Who was working the hardest to save whom in that story? It says they didn't want to throw him overboard. It said they rowed hard, rowed very hard to try to bring it to land, but they couldn't. They couldn't. But Jonah is asleep during that time. Of course, Jonah's mad, and he's just checked out kind of at that point. I don't necessarily see a direct connect between that and this passage right here. There is going to be a connect, though, later on with the story of Jonah. You remember what that's going to be? They come to Jesus and say, "Give us a sign. We want a sign that you really are who you say you are." And he says there's not going to be any sign given in this generation other than the sign that was given in or by Jonah. That is, Jonah was in the belly of the fish 3 days and three nights, so the Son of Man will be in the heart of the earth 3 days and three nights. So there, he does make a connect there, but I don't really see one for this passage. Should have thrown Jesus overboard. No, I don't see that. I don't see that. But anyway, lots of interesting things happen around the Sea of Galilee there. It's going to be the same body of water that on another occasion Jesus walks out there to them. They're by themselves, and he walks on it. And Peter looks and says, "Lord, you walking on water? If that be thou, bid me to come to you." And he says, "Come on, Peter." And Peter steps out and walks to him for a few minutes, a few steps, till he realizes, "I'm walking on water. I can't walk on water." And he begins to sink. And Jesus, he said, "Lord, save me." And he takes him and puts him back in the boat. And we get real critical of Peter. That he stepped out there and he was walking on water and he lost his faith. And we wrestle him and beat him up over that. But I'm going to point something out to you. He's the only one in the boat. There's a bunch of them in the boat. He's the only one that got out there to start with. Nobody else had the faith to step out on the water to begin with. So we might ought to be a little bit more sympathetic with Peter on that. But that's another passage. I'm going, as a preacher said one time, going everywhere preaching the word this morning. So we're just grabbing here and there and yonder. But do anybody have anything back on Mark? Yes, sir. Okay. Okay. All right. Uh-huh. That's right. That's right. They think rather than seeing him as a solution, they see him as the source of the problem. So we've never had this happen to us before. There you go. Well, I believe we'll leave it on that. That's a good application to leave it on. And we'll be back here 9 or 10 o'clock. Thank you.